Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your one-stop shop for raising kids in this tech-heavy world. We bring on professionals and experts to give you all the tools you need to help your kids become fire-breathing warriors that have the strength to break out of the mold society has put them in. At the end of the day, we're all here for one reason: to help save some kids. I'm your host, Nate Webb. Let's get to it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your host, Nate Webb, live in studio Salt Lake City area, and we got a show for you today. It's currently Mental Health Awareness Month, and I wanted you guys to hear more from folks who are in the trenches with you, like you, that you can relate to, seeing what younger people are going through. And boy, did I find someone. So Alicia Butler is a best-selling author, teen and tween mindset mentor with a specialization in positive psychology, suicide prevention, and emotional intelligence. She's a former educator for 14 years with a degree in psychology and English and a master's in educational leadership. She's the founder of the Hope Hero Foundation, whose mission is to bring hope to the hopeless and proactively prepare families to become heroes in their own stories. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Well, thank you so much, Nate. I'm excited to be here with you and to have a great conversation about how we can support our families and our youth.
Absolutely. So first of all, how the heck are you, dude? How's life going?
I am doing great. Like, the end of school year is happening. The kids are excited to be out. I've got a boy graduating high school.
Oh my goodness, you do?
Yes, I do. Yep. He's graduating and he's going to be going and playing football out in California. So it's going to be a big change for us.
That is crazy. That's crazy. So how many kids do you have?
We have three. So we have our oldest is 18. He does football. Then we've got our middle child, Boston. He's 15 and he does soccer, wrestling, football, all of that. And then our youngest is 12 and she is graduating sixth grade. So she'll be heading into junior high.
Oh my goodness. Year. Oh my goodness. You have big kids now. You have all big kids now. That's crazy.
We do.
So you have quite the background with mental health and all its importance. And you've had actual several family members that have been impacted with mental health, right? Tell us a little bit about that, about some of the things you've gone through in that mental health realm that's kind of pushed you to this space.
Yeah, a lot of it started, honestly, with my boy who is graduating right now. And we didn't quite know what was going on, but when I was doing my degree in psychology and we had to do some research papers, I actually did some studies on my own kid and kind of going through and saying, okay, this fits, this doesn't, what's going on? And by the time he was about 7, almost 8 years old, he would be running away from home, saying that this world is a better place without him, super angry, upset. And eventually he grabbed a knife and said that he was going to kill himself.
Oh no.
And that was the biggest, I would say that was the first biggest thing that made me go, I need to dive more into what is going on with mental health, mindset, and everything. And so I came home from the classroom that year to save my own son's life. And a part of what we did, and I want every parent to buy this book, it's Gary Chapman. It's The 5 Love Languages of Children. We implemented those strategies every single day, every single night. And it took probably a year and a half to 2 years where I was thinking, and my husband was thinking, is this even working? Like, right. Is what we're doing working? Because so many times everyone wants an overnight success, but if it changes overnight, it could change back overnight again. And so really just going through and making sure that we were finding the root causes of things and then helping to support that child so that he knew he was loved and supported and seen and valued. So that was our first kind of big, oh my gosh, I know what it's like to have a child who doesn't want to be here, who doesn't want to live.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I can't even imagine. And like just navigating that, just because, I mean, you don't want to like flip out on them, because you want them to just be able to kind of feel, deal, and heal in your arms. But it's incredibly scary having a kid that is, I mean, when they say it out loud to a parent, I'm a high school counselor. And so I talk a lot with kids that are in that dark place. When they say it out loud to their parents, it's sometimes the first time they've said it out loud, period. That, like, I don't want to live. I want to die. And for some of those kids, it's the act of saying it out loud that actually helps them know, oh, dang, I want to live, actually. That sounded really scary coming out of my mouth. But it's a super scary place to be. And that's not the only one too. You had a sister, correct? That passed away.
Yeah, it was my sister-in-law. But I want to just jump back to what you were saying before
Oh,
we
for
move
sure. Go for it.
forward with that. And a lot of these kids, when they say stuff like that, that is their cry for help.
Oh,
That
absolutely.
is them saying, "Hey, see me, hear me, listen to me, and support me through this. I don't know how to do this." And it's not that they really want to take their life. It's just that they don't know how to deal with this pain, to move through those things on their own. And
Yeah.
so that's one of the big things. And we know that when kids do decide to take their lives, it's usually within 24 to 48 hours
Yeah.
where they will take action on that. And so if you are a parent, you have a child say that to you, please listen to them, and make sure that you can get them the help and the support that they need to move through those emotions.
Yeah. Oh, what was it? I do a lot of suicide prevention, like presentations and stuff, just curriculum they give us school counselors. And I saw one stat that was like 90 something percent of all people that die by suicide will tell someone what they're planning to do and how they're planning to do it and when they're planning to do it before they actually go and do it. They don't, they want help, guys. It's their plea for help. They will tell somebody. And even if they mask it with, you better not tell anybody, they want you to tell somebody. They want help. It's a plea for help, and it's so heartbreaking because it's not that they want to die. They want to stop. They want their being to cease to exist so they don't feel this pain anymore. And they don't know how to get rid of that pain.
Well, and you brought up a great point there because they do say something to a friend, and I've taught and I'm nationally certified in suicide prevention and do probably a lot of the trainings that you're teaching kids and did
Yeah,
that in the
QPR.
schools. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And a lot of the kids are afraid that they're going to lose their best friend. My best friend's going to be upset at me. They're
Right.
never going to talk to me again. And one of the things
Well,
that I always tell them is like, well, it's better to have someone upset at you and for them to get that help, right? Instead
yeah.
of them not being here
Right.
tomorrow or next week.
Right. I mean, ask yourself the question, would you rather your friend be upset or would you rather your friend be dead? I mean, and that's a when put so bluntly, it makes it very easy to be like, oh yeah, being mad's not that bad. Being mad is
Right.
temporary. Being mad is temporary. Being dead is permanent. And
Yeah.
a lot of kids don't. They, I mean, that's the story of childhood, right? Making long-lasting decisions off of short-term feelings, and helping kids not to, I don't know, not to give into those impulses. And part of that's just having someone to talk to so that, they make it through that 48-hour hot window without making that impulsive decision. They know who they can talk to. They know the people in their circle. They know how they can use the people in their circle, and they're able to kind of implement that safety plan of sorts so that they stay one more
Yes,
day,
because
make it through one more
it's
day.
Yep, exactly. Well, and it's Ed Milet always says, like, the one, or, you know, just one more try, one more time. And I really believe that it's just stay one more day,
Yep.
one more day, and then the next day, and the next day with all of that. And so maybe I'll jump into, you know, my story with my sister-in-law, because she didn't have that one more day.
Right.
We knew that she was struggling. We
Right.
knew she had depression, anxiety. She was getting some help for possibly bipolar and working through things, seeing a therapist. We didn't know how bad it was until after looking back and seeing all of the signs that I wish I would have seen sooner or been aware of before. So she died by an overdose. And
an intentional overdose?
Well, on the reports, it is not stated as that. And so
but you kind
it's
of just
really,
know.
I know I would not be doing the work that I'm doing right now if I did not believe that to be true. I know some other family members do not believe that, and that's okay. That's their perspective on things. But I know that through her loss and her life, I've saved thousands of kids.
Right. No,
and I
absolutely.
have chills right now just thinking of that, because I know that because I lost someone I love so much, my mission and my purpose is to not have you in the club that I'm in of loss and grief and tragedy
right.
due to mental health.
We want that club very small, guys. We don't want people to be in that club. That's not a fun club to be in.
No, it's not. It's not. But that's the hard part of getting people to understand that we have to proactively do stuff. We need to prepare before it's crisis, because I feel like a lot of what we're doing is crisis intervention, not proactive empowerment, proactive preparation. And so that's a lot of where my work and what I'm dedicating, you know, really the rest of my life to, is helping prepare before a crisis hits, before an obstacle feels too overwhelming that they even think about suicide, because we know we have challenges. There's obstacles. There's going to be things that come up in life that are hard.
Yeah.
And it's helping and building the communication and those connections, creative solutions, and really having that courage to ask for the help, and also to take action steps every single day, you know, daily directions to make sure that your mindset and your mental capacity is strengthening each day.
Yeah. How old was your sister?
She was my age. This year's been rough. She was 39.
Oh my gosh. And when did she pass away?
It was in 2016.
So it's been like 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's 7 years. Holy crap.
7 years. And it still hurts.
Yeah,
the ripple effect of it never ends for anybody who's left behind with it. It never ends.
Yeah.
And it's just how people respond to trauma and tragedy is one of those things that I teach people as well, because a lot of times people decide, you know what, this happened to me and now I can never do X, Y, and Z, or I'm damaged, or I'm broken and I can't move forward. And that's a lot of the victim mentality of staying victim to a circumstance. And I want to empower people that no matter what has happened to you in your life, you can move through it.
Mm-hmm.
You can use that to shape who you become in the future and how you support and help and impact the lives of other people because of what you've been through.
Yeah, it reminds me of something that one of the guys I get to talk to, amazing individuals, because of this podcast. And one of the guys I talked to just the other week, Todd Sylvester, and he said something real cool. It was, life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you.
Yes.
You know, these things that happen, even these hard things that happen, you know, once you get past them, and you can get past them, like, you're going to be so much stronger for it. You're going to, you know, and everybody who is alive, we get to move forward. Everyone who's not here, they don't. And so you can make the choice to move forward. Now, you were in education for a long time, right? You were a teacher for like 14 years?
Yeah, so I was in the classroom from 2008, and then I left at the end of last year, so up till 2022.
Holy smokes.
I was in
what
the
did you
classroom.
Teach?
I taught English. I primarily ninth grade English.
Freshman.
And
you
yes.
Taught freshmen. Oh, and you special soul. You get a place in heaven for that act alone.
Oh,
my
dude,
goodness, those
I
wonderful kids. They're wonderful.
Love them. That is my favorite group of kids because they're really able to have some conversations. They want to communicate and ask questions and figure out how to navigate through things. And so the cool part about that, I was in ninth grade, the curriculum is Romeo and Juliet, where two
talk
teens
about
take
depressed
their
teens.
life. Yes. And I shifted a lot of the way in which people talk about Romeo and Juliet. They think, oh, it's this love story. And I'm like, it is not a love story. It is a tragedy.
Oh, yeah.
Six people lose their life in the span of less than a week because of impulsive decisions, lack of communication, expectations by parents, not being able to trust and feel safe in really expressing how you're feeling about things.
Yeah, boy, I work in high school, and I was in a classroom waiting to call a kid out to come to my office, and they're going over Romeo and Juliet, and they're reading over. It was right after Tybalt, right, dies, and like they're talking about going to war and stuff, and some kids like, these teenagers, where's DCFS? It was so funny. And I was like, actually, good point, dude. Like, this is like, this is a bad example of like, you don't want to be these people. This is not something you want to, this is not the example you guys want to follow.
Yeah. And so I used that to talk about mental health. I'd bring in people. We would have those supports, and where I trained and certified in suicide prevention, we had that discussion with those things and really being able to talk about who is ultimately responsible for their deaths. And while these circumstances do happen and people play parts and roles and add to what is going on, and especially in a teenager's mind, ultimately that choice is up to them. Mm-hmm. And because there are teens who take their lives, there are kids who feel guilty, there are kids who attempt way too often. I was actually looking up some stuff yesterday, and I think some of the newest data says that about 4,500 people in Utah attempt each year.
Yep.
And then it's over 600 who die by suicide. And then we have almost 600 people who die by overdoses each year.
Right.
Yeah. And those aren't even classified as suicides.
Suicide, right. Yeah.
But
that's
it's
crazy.
In the mental health realm. And so I want to change the statistics with that. And I truly used a lot of the curriculum that I did with the hero's journey and mythology to talk to kids about how they're going to be called on adventures, right? Whether they want to or not. They're going to have challenges come up, trials, monsters. You're going to have friends. You're going to have foes. You're going to have some mentors who support you. And there's going to come a time where you're in this dark cave and you're not sure that you can get up. You're not sure you have enough fight in you to be able to overcome whatever challenge it is. But then you lean back on those tools, on that training, and somehow you find it within to rise up, face that monster, face that challenge, and then you come back a new, braver, better, more courageous person than you were before that trial, before that call to adventure. So next time, you know you can do it. You have that resiliency, because if you've done it once, you can do it again.
Yeah. And so you know, with your 14 years in the classroom, what were some of the things that you noticed kids were struggling with that they still are struggling with?
A lot of kids right now specifically are struggling with, how do I make friends? How do I keep friends? How do I trust people to say things or not say things about me? And mm-hmm. really it's building, and that kind of comes back and stems to that self-confidence, that self-esteem of looking for external validation about who you are. And yeah. so these kids are looking outside of themselves based on other people's ideas and perspectives of who they think they should be, instead of going, well, wait a second, who do I want to be? What are my values? What are my beliefs? What do I want to accomplish? How do I want to have impact? And how do I want to feel each day?
And so, like, I don't know, how do you see social media playing into it all of it with these kids? Because I feel like, especially in like junior high and high schools, every kid's on a smartphone, every kid's on social media. And I feel like it's impacting them a lot more than most people give it credit for.
Yes. So I was actually on another podcast yesterday and we talked a little bit about this, that the technology these kids are exposed to, the information is coming in at a more rapid rate than they are able to cognitively process. They're not able to identify what's true, what's not, what's real, and whether things are actually happening or not. All of this stuff is coming at them at such fast rates. And then they're not talking about this. They're not having the communication after seeing things, after going, well, I wonder if this is true or not. They might ask their friends, but they're not having those conversations with an adult. They're not researching anything. They're just taking everything as face value.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
So they take it so literally. Everything they think it's like everything they see, they think it's reality. I mean, the average age of pornography exposure in Utah right now, it's chilling around like 9 years old. And so when kids see that, they think that's reality. They think that is reality of a healthy sexual relationship. I mean, that's where sexual abusers originate from. And because of the examples they saw as a young kid being exposed to that stuff, and then thinking that it's reality, but it's not just there. It's just, blowing their self-esteem down the tube. And so many kids, they're like, I feel so worthless. I'm like, why? They're like, oh, well, so-and-so is so skinny, or at this, like constantly comparing themselves. And I'm like, hey, y'all need to just get off the interwebs for like a solid year and heal from, oh my gosh, from all of the trauma that you're going through.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know you've heard this. I'm sure your listeners have heard this, you know, many times. Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yep.
If you are constantly in comparison, you're taking the light right from yourself.
Yeah.
And so to, you know, instead of looking at someone and saying, oh, I wish I had this, I wish I had that, why don't you go and make friends with them and surround yourself with them? Instead of saying, oh, I want that, why don't you become friends and be around them? Instead of thinking, oh, I can never be this, invite yourself to that friendship. Invite yourself to where you want to be, right?
Yeah. And so after all this time, you know, doing these things with these kids, empowering them and whatnot, why did you leave the classroom to go full-time into mental health? Like, how did you end up in this space?
Well, there was a big catalyst that happened, and I don't know how many know about this, but in November 2021, my dad actually came in. He's a Vietnam vet. He came into my classroom, and he was speaking to my advisory class. In the morning, we had welcomed a bunch of kids in, flag ceremony, all of that stuff.
Right.
And then he came back later that day. With my mom, I had my ninth grade son there, my niece, my sister-in-law, and then we had about 40 kids in the classroom. We had two different classes in there. And he was talking to them about being an American hero and asking them about their heroes and all of that. And while he was in his presentation, he just said, "Leash, I'm feeling a little dizzy." And I just said, "Dad, do you need to sit in my chair?" And he said, "Yeah, that'd be a good idea." And I'm getting a little emotional. It's been a minute since I've, shared this. But so my dad sat in my chair, and that's when he took his last breaths. It was in my classroom.
He died?
In my classroom, in my arms, I held him. And I felt him leave. And I call this a very beautifully tragic day, because my dad was not only an American hero, he was a hero my entire life. He actually was an English teacher and then an administrator. He was surrounded by loved ones. And the other thing that I want to point out with this too, is that I had two teen heroes in my classroom that day. One of my sweet students, Megan, she said, "Miss Butler, I can do it. I can do CPR." So I have this sweet 14, 15 year old girl giving CPR to my dad, and another sweet girl, Alyssa, counting the cadence and the rhythm with that until help arrived. And so we were never able to revive him.
So did he just pass out, go unconscious?
Yeah, they said it was a heart attack with everything. And so that was very, very hard. Actually, that was the hardest thing I've ever been through. I've been through things with my son, with my sister-in-law, and then
that's
with
your
my
daddy,
dad.
Though.
Yep. And I'm the baby. I'm the youngest and only
girl. You were spoiled by daddy, man. Your daddy's a little girl.
I was.
Shoot.
And but here's what it did for me. It gave me the permission to say, "Leisha, you don't have to do this the way it's always been done.
Right.
You can make a difference in more kids' lives outside of the classroom by bringing your work to many classrooms." And so it gave me that courage to walk away from it. I did go part-time at semester, and I could have easily not gone back, and many thought I was crazy to go back. But here's the thing. I needed to know that I could be resilient.
Right.
And I was teaching those kids real life resilience of moving forward through a tragedy. I will never be the same person I was before that. And I shouldn't expect to be the same.
Right.
But I'm using that to move forward, to bounce forward, and to be able to show that, you know what, there's things that are out of your control.
Yeah.
And it may be hard, and you may want to quit, and you may want to give up on yourself. But I realized I had two options.
Mm-hmm.
I could either be curled up in a ball and sad and depressed, honestly, for the rest of my life, or I could say,
and no one would blame you.
No, they wouldn't. It's an excuse, right? Like, because there is that, like, people have been through some hard things. And we think, well, I don't know how I'd do that. I couldn't do that. But where I've taught so many kids, and I've still got my kids, what am I teaching them about who they are going to be when hard things happen? And my son was in that classroom with me, my ninth grade son, and my niece. And so I went back because I knew they had to walk through those doors every single day for the rest of the year. And
man, they watched grandpa die at school. Oh my gosh.
And it changed the direction of my life, and in a positive way. Since then, I've written a best-selling book that truly has flown through me because I have a message to share. And I truly believe it is divinely guided that I have things that have not been done before in classrooms to connect the schools, the parents, and the kids together to be able to rise, to be able to courageously become the heroes of their own stories. So when we talk about heroes, there's a huge correlation to my dad, right? I taught Hero's Journey, but my dad truly is the hero who inspired the Hope Hero Foundation and really the hopehero.com. Like everything that I'm doing, he was the catalyst to say, it's time. It's time to put this out there.
So when did you start the Hope Hero? When did all this come about?
It would have been just last year. So after leaving the classroom, so I wrote my book, and then over the summer, I put together a curriculum. And the Daily Compass is my company that I started. And it's composed of four different directions that I feel that we need to be able to go to build resilience. And the first one's connection, then communication, then creativity for solving problems, for figuring things out, and then the courage to take those steps in the direction that you're trying to go. So there's four directions. Those things, obviously within those, there's more encompassed in it, but it builds that resilience day by day, choice by choice, moment by moment, that, you know, I believe you're always one decision away from a completely different life.
Yeah.
Over and over again. So last year is when I started this.
That's awesome. I love that. Yeah. Man, just so many good things there. So much to unpackage. I hope you guys go back, rewind, pause, what you got to do, re-listen, so you can get as much from this as you possibly can. Now, as a school counselor, I found a lot of kids, I mean, what you said, they just want friends. They want to make friends. They want people to love them. They want people to love. That's why they engage in risky social media behavior. They act out. They just want friends. And so I guess in closing, how can we help these young people battle against the machine and create empowered friendships?
I love that. So here's the crazy thing. I'm actually doing a boot camp, and it's seriously called Empowered Friendships.
Oh, look at that.
Yes. I'm like, oh my gosh, when you said that. So that's a lot of what I work on, is building that self-confidence, that connection with yourself. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I did for my students, and I did challenges for them to be able to do this, was to give themselves a high five in the mirror every single day, every single morning. Because a high five, what it represents, and it's Mel Robbins who did a bunch of studies on the high five effect. But when you receive a high five, it's like, I'm awesome. I see you. Good job. Keep going. Well, why are we waiting for someone else to give us a high five? Yeah. Give yourself a high five in the mirror. So I would give my students, like, hey, did you give yourself a high five? I would give them a piece of candy every single day for going and giving themselves a high five or giving someone else a high five. Mm-hmm. And that shifted a lot of their mindsets coming in. Mm-hmm. So that's something that they can definitely do.
I like that.
Looking at the things that they are grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Surrounding. Here's one of the things. Like, these kids always want to have as many friends and be popular. But a lot of the popular kids are wearing these masks.
They're alone.
I've got to be this way to be it, to fit in. And what I tell kids all the time is, I don't want you to fit in. I want you to find where you belong. Fitting in is changing who you are to meet somebody else's ideas and perspectives of who they think you should be. But belonging is showing up as your honest, authentic, messy, crazy, silly, and real self.
Yeah.
You don't need a lot of friends. Find that one or two friends, you know, have one or two friends that have your back.
Yeah.
And you will find more joy in being a team, not trying to always just compare and, oh, I'll be happy when, or I'll be happy if.
Yeah. No, it'll never be enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh man, this has been so amazing, guys. If you want to improve, if you're worried about your teen and they can't make friends or they're sad, help them improve their relationship with themselves. And then that will consequently improve the relationships with everyone in their life. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today. This has been amazing. Before we end, how can people see what you are up to? Shameless plug time. Let's hear it.
So you guys can follow me at The Hope Hero on Instagram or at Rise with Alicia. And then the website is thehopehero.com. And we are building some really cool things on there. Nate, I would love to talk with you after. I've created some customized curriculum for kids. The teachers will have it and the parents will have it, so that we're building a trifecta where we can build communication and conversations and connection to truly prepare our kids for the world that they're living in right now.
That's beautiful. And all of that will be in the podcast description. So please go check her out and see what she's doing, because it is amazing stuff going on. And thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Save the Kids podcast. If you want us to bring this message to your community, follow the link in the bio to fill out a speaker form so we can make it happen. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Save the Kids Inc. for your one-stop shop on raising kids in this tech-heavy world. Go home and give your kids an 8-second hug, and we'll see you on the next one.